time to awake from your sleep. Rise to a new day with each your soul to keep. Come, my children, time to awake from your sleep. Rise to a new day with each your soul to keep.
Hello, and welcome to the Enlightened Medicine Show with Dr. Valerie Olmsted, the holographic physician. And tonight, we are going to hear about some stuff you probably haven't heard about before. Before we get into that, let me first mention that our wonderful sponsor, HydraMay Skin Nutrition, has many products for both men and women. And it's all natural, all organic skin nutrition. Great stuff. So please give it a try. You can find them at www.hydramay.com. That's HYDRAME.com. And tonight, we have a friend of mine, Mitchell Rabin, who is the host and founder of A Better World, TV and radio. He's a psychotherapist as well as, gosh, I don't know what to call you, Mitchell. You've got so many different titles, and acupuncturist.
Truly holistic, Valerie.
Yes, truly holistic, and I totally love it. So welcome to the show, Mitch, and I'm going to ask you please go ahead and tell the listeners about yourself first, because you can do that way better than I can.
Oh, sure. God, I began really, Valerie, in the early 1980s in New York as a transpersonal psychotherapist, eco-psychotherapist, and shortly after beginning in private practice here in the Big Apple, I, through a study of Tai Chi Chuan and ancient Chinese martial arts, I became really interested in Chinese medicine and Chinese energetics. So I went into acupuncture. So while I was building my practice as a therapist, I was studying Chinese energetics and actually end up being, you know, one of the first people around who integrated counseling and emotional work into acupuncture, or acupuncture into it, you could say, but putting together a blend of the two. And coupled with that really was my deep love of Mother Earth, really, and my deep reverence, you could say, for her, and what became the field of eco-psychology, which I was inside of, but not even knowing it was a field, but just through my own self-inquiry and self-discovery. So I linked the elements, you could say, of found in Chinese thinking, Chinese energetics, with what I consider to be establishing the health, the mental and emotional health of my clients. So that's sort of how I began my work, and that led into my founding a healing center in New York called the Center for Creative Well-Being in 1989, which went further to use flotation tanks as well as what is best referred to as a sound womb, which was a kind of a holographic, I love your use of that word, by the way, Valerie.
Thank you.
A holographic sound experience, which was what we called the dry flotation tank, known as the Rest Rider. It's funny, actually, I asked my assistant, I've had it on an organic farm in New Jersey for many years. They're selling the farm, and I don't have a place for it anymore, so we're about to pop it onto eBay. There are four of these that exist in the entire world, so the people on eBay will not know what it is they're beholding, but it's a womb of sound surrounded by speakers and a hood of speakers and a video monitor. So it creates this web, if you will, of sound and the vibration. The frequency of the music kind of pulses through your body as you're lying on the sound bed. So this is the kind of work I've been doing for many, many years, and as time has gone on, I've gotten more involved and less involved in the use of needles and more involved in the use of very sophisticated body scan technology, which is very much, you know, computerized energy medicine called the Life System. And the Harmonic Energetic Balancing Program, and I've been working with clients using these modalities. You could say it's computerized kinesiology, really. And I've been doing this kind of work with my clients for, at this point, most of the since around 2000 up to the present. Mm. So that gives a little bit of an idea. But in 1993, I my practice was going so well, and my healing center was getting very popular. I was getting interviewed a lot on radio shows, sort of like yours, and I really found that I had a real appreciation for reaching large numbers of people. I have an Aquarius ascendant, and it really was resonant with me. So I began a TV show based on the name of my organization, which was called A Better World. So I've been on TV, community television, in Manhattan since 1993, every week on the air.
Oh, my gosh.
And yeah, exactly. And I've done over 1,500 interviews, and dialogues is really what they are. I think more like what you do, Valerie. And in about 3 or 4 years, I've been doing radio for almost the same amount of time, but not anchored in my own show, more co-hosting and producing others. And but about 4 years ago, Gary Null, who had been on Pacifica Radio in New York City, God knows, since for 30-some-odd years, who's been a very close friend and colleague for many years, since 1990, and who really inspired me to begin the TV show, gave me a radio show on Progressive Radio Network. So I'm on every week after him, every Thursday at 1 o'clock Eastern Standard Time on A Better World Radio.
Wow,
so,
that's pretty good for getting your ratings up there.
All of those gaps, but that gives at least a little bit of an overarching perspective. My work really is dedicated to broadcasting healing and education around healing, and healing from within to without, to include our entire planet and, in reality, beyond.
Well, you know, that must be why we hit it off when we first met, because we're on the same mission.
Yeah. Yes,
and
exactly.
You're just doing it grander than I am, because I just kind of have, you know, too many other things I'm doing. I guess I get a little too scattered. But you do such a fabulous job. And let me just tell the listeners, where we met was when I was doing my first Write Your Book in 8 Days retreat. And so Mitchell and I just kind of hung out, you know, a few lunches and started talking, and realized that we have very similar views on where the earth is going and what we can do to help, and how to help the people and the animals and nature herself. So it's been really interesting, you know, having these different
It was very obvious, Valerie, from the beginning when we met in June in Sedona at Tom Bird's 8-day writing retreat, that, you know, you and I had a resonance field that was matched, you know.
Yeah.
And it showed up with, you know, very few sentences between us that was like, oh, yeah. I think it mainly showed up in humor. And I was like, okay, I got it. You know, it was like,
one of the few people that really gets what I'm saying.
Immediately. And with less is more, and someone can finish the other person's sentences and they just met. You know, something is good cooking.
Yeah, it's really fun. It just really shows you more about synchronicity and about the whole law of attraction. You know, people think of the law of attraction just basically as, you know, a way to get money. But really, what you're doing is you're resonating and you're attracting that to you, which you want more of.
Exactly.
And I find myself looking for the other members of the team, because I know it's time. And so I'm resonating that as I go out, and you must be too, because our paths crossed. And so it's just something to remind people of, because there's a lot of people out in the audience there that kind of feel isolated, you know, and they feel like there's nobody else that's going through what they're going through, and, oh, life is so hard, and, you know, it's not fun, and all that kind of stuff. And I'm here to tell you, we're all in the same boat. You know, you got to make your fun, and you have to really radiate that frequency to draw the other people to you that you really want to spend time with. And and that requires a little bit of discipline. And
that's
one of the reasons
and,
that
you know,
I really wanted to have you on the show, Mitchell, besides
separate.
The fact.
Pardon? I'm sorry.
One of the reasons I really wanted to have you on the show is, as you know, we started talking about German New Medicine and total biology, which absolutely fits into very much what you're doing. And even though I haven't done it yet, I totally believe in the tenets of both philosophies, and they kind of cross over anyway. So I'm really anxious for the audience to get to know that. So let's start off with that. But I'd also like you to talk about what you know about what's going on with the swine flu, because I think they'd like to hear it from somebody besides me.
Okay, very good, very good. Well, to start with, I'll just give a quick little thumbnail sketch of how I personally got connected to total biology. First of all, an old friend of mine told me about the German New Medicine, oh God knows, many, many years ago. There was very little in English, but she had a book on her coffee table, and I looked it over, and it kind of looked, you know, it was like so obviously true that, mm-hmm. you know, it was like a duck to water for me. And I'll get back to that. I'll circle around. But then again, a very dear friend of mine, Natasha Kolsar, her name is, who runs a community up in British Columbia across the Montana border called IDEAL, which stands for something like the Institute for the Development of Education, Arts, and Leisure. It's based on the work of the Bulgarian mystic Omram Mikhail Ivanov. She, Russian-born, had been a student of Ivanov in the south of France for many years, a very elevated, enlightened being she is, and so is he. And she and I became friends in New York some years ago, and we stay in touch regularly. I've been out to the community there, and one of the things she told me about once about 6 years ago, I'd say, was this thing called Total Biology and the work of Dr. Claude Sabah, a Moroccan-born Jewish physician, PhD, Kabbalist. Wow. I thought I did a lot of things. And so she said, I am essentially the spiritual head of this community. She doesn't put it quite that way. She's much more modest, but that is the case. It's an international community. And she said, I am a student of Dr. Claude Sabah. I travel to Montreal twice a year or so to study humbly at his feet the work of total biology. It's a brilliant mind-body system, which is based on the new medicine. So she said, you and Claude have to meet. I can't wait for it to happen. He'll either come down to New York to meet you, or if you would be able to get up to Montreal, I'd really love to arrange it. So it happened in October of 2004. That I did go up there, and I was his guest for a couple of days. I took his seminar, albeit in French, and so it was being translated because my French isn't that good. And it was like going, Valerie, to an evangelical meeting in French. And, Canadian, Quebecois. And it was so fascinating because it was about eyes, specifically on eyes. And just to give a taste, he's a wild-eyed, brilliant Virgo, and was storytelling, a la, I would say, Milton Erickson in many ways. And for those of you out there who know the brilliant work of Milton Erickson, on which basis neurolinguistic programming was formed largely, and the work of Fritz Perls, Virginia Satir, and Gregory Bateson. And at the end of a two-day seminar, all on eyes, he asked the question, is there anybody who has gotten any personal benefit from this seminar for yourselves? Well, just to say, that audience there were probably 200 people attending this weekend seminar. Mm-hmm. And they were psychologists, doctors, nurses, nutritionists, acupuncturists, psychotherapists, and on any number of different kinds of practitioners. Researchers, and people got up, clambered to the stage to say, my God, I have been healed. And the healing all took place through story, through identification with a story about someone who was witnessing something they couldn't stand to see. And as a result of them not being able to stand what they were seeing, their eyes followed in sequence, and they developed one kind or another of eye disorder, One fellow I'll not forget was from the camps in outside of Germany, I think it was in Poland, who was a child survivor of the Holocaust, who had had an eye disease from then, when his own parents he saw being taken away, and he was so emotionally afflicted that he was not able to see properly until that seminar. When it was brought to consciousness, the kinds of underlying emotional conflicts and distress that is passed on generationally, and these are, by the way, the tenets of total biology. And when he got clear and saw what was afflicting him from his childhood, he broke through and was able to see for the first time in all of his 70-some-odd years.
Wow.
So,
this goes right in alignment with what I've always believed as a healer, and that we don't have to do all these fancy, weird things. You know, we should be able just to be in the area and to have the person heal. And I know that's the way it really is.
Yes.
And
exactly.
So, you know, this is like right up my alley. You know, when
yes,
I first
exactly,
heard about this,
exactly.
I was like, yeah.
You know, Valerie, a good way of understanding in a generic way, although I can get very specific, is this is body as metaphor. When somebody begins to recognize that our physical body is virtually and but an printout of our emotional, mental, and soul's life, everything starts to make more sense. Everything follows a certain coherent pattern and logic all of a sudden. Do you know what I mean?
I do.
I know it
makes perfectly good sense to me because,
exactly.
You know, one of the things that's hard to get across to people is to say, look, we're in a video game. This is not the real us. And
right.
The bodies aren't actually real. And people go, what the hell are you talking about? And it's like, I know it feels real. You know, that's part of the game. But knowing that, it's like, okay, there should be an easier way to heal that doesn't require surgery and chemotherapy and radiation and, you know, $500 worth of supplements a month and, you know, removing your blood from your body and irradiating it and heating it and throwing it back in your body and all these crazy things that we do to get people well. That has never made sense to me.
Yes, exactly. I understand. It's, you know, where I come from since I've studied total biology and A Better World, my organization has been promulgating total biology in the United States ever since. I met Claude Sabat, and the following year I brought one of his colleagues to New York, and that really largely kicked off total biology. Another fellow I brought to New York after some time, a fellow named Gilbert Renaud, who's been teaching out on the West Coast for some years, he literally began with a little enclave in Marin County and another small one in a living room in New York City, but A Better World was largely responsible for literally bringing hundreds of practitioners in the larger New York area, although we had people flying in from London, Switzerland, Florida, West Coast to take our classes. We really began to penetrate the world and show them the brilliance of understanding the nature of the illness by way of understanding the emotional distress and conflict underneath it, i.e. Mm-hmm. causal relationship.
Mm-hmm.
And once you see that the body is but an instrument or a puppet or an analog, a fractal analog of the emotional life of a human being and his family generationally passed down psychogenetically, then magic happens. Then you see that the illness, so-called, that is so reified in modern medicine, is but a reflection. It is a software program expression of, like painting on a canvas, of the emotional disorder. And really, I say, Valerie, to people that total biology, one way of understanding it in an encapsulated form, is by saying it's like Louise Hay on steroids.
Mm-hmm.
It goes far beyond anything I believe she imagined, with all due respect. It's much more sophisticated. But it is true that when we have trouble digesting something that happened to us, something someone said to us, this does, over time, potentially lead to a stomach disorder. Mm-hmm. It could lead to stomach cancer. If someone can't speak their truth, over time, they will have a throat problem, a throat illness, cancer of the larynx, what have you. Mm-hmm. The cancer is but an expression of the emotional soul's condition and its struggle, what it's going through. It gets reflected literally as an artist paints a picture, a musician makes music about his own emotional life. So the body is the canvas that our soul is using to paint and tell the story of our situation.
So, yeah, and that makes sense, too. I mean, people have been talking about the subconscious being in control, but, you know, this might help people understand it better.
Yeah, exactly, exactly. And the stories, when you start to really plumb this depth, it gets really interesting because, you know, basically what we're dealing with is the quantum field of a family generationally. And we see that the idea that comes to us through the Bible, of all things, that says that the sins of the father are visited upon the son, rather than taking that kind of literally and morally, in total biology, we instead say the unresolved conflict of the parents can become the potential physical conflict of the child, and we have proof of that happening. So, you know, we see that when, you know, one story that I remember hearing from Gilbert is that there was a parent that came in to his office whose child had leukemia. And one second. I'm sending somebody to hear the radio show.
Oh,
I think would appreciate you and the show and our dialogue. This child had leukemia. Now, here, this will be an interesting contrast, I think, for your audience. Parents bring a child to a doctor or to a hospital and say, my child has been diagnosed with leukemia, you know, fix her. And the doctors will, of course, look her over and seek to do something like a bone marrow transplant or something, thinking very locally that that child has a disease.
Mm-hmm.
And it is just the opposite of holism. It's the opposite of understanding the holographic resonance field, if you will, the quantum field in which that child has been born, into which, okay?
Mm-hmm.
And so the by vast contrast, the total biology-oriented therapist will start asking some questions of the parents, knowing that the problem is systemic, holistic, generational, and ask questions, because if there is a blood disease in someone, blood relates, of course, to family, bloodlines. So the total biology therapist recognizes immediately that there is a family issue at hand, usually some clash in the family, some conflict in the family. The clue is already there, whether we know what the blood issue is or not. Specifically, in the case of leukemia, it has to do specifically with there being serious devaluation of a person in the family clan, like they are being looked upon, or more really, they perceive that they are being looked upon lowly in and by the family. So in this case, through asking a series of questions of the parents, it was kind of uncovered that both mother and both husband and wife both felt seriously devaluated in their own respective families of origin. And guess what? As you were talking about law of attraction, it works in both ways. They found each other. Why? Because the larger picture, the cosmic quantum field, seeks to bring homeostasis, balance, harmony, and resolution and healing to those who are so afflicted. So as if homeopathically, they found each other, right?
Mm-hmm.
So they did.
Yep.
And they gave birth to a child with leukemia. It looks like to a Western doctor that that child has leukemia. But from the point of view of total biology, it's the parents who had an unresolved emotional conflict, unresolved, deep, gets born in the offspring for resolution. Okay? So the resolution to the child's leukemia is the parents doing their own inner work to clear up and clarify their own issues. And upon them doing that, well, let me put it this way, in a very real-world situation where this specific incident occurred, the baby, after the parents left their first session, smiled and had a look of peace on her face like they had not seen in that child before.
Wow.
So.
Yeah, see, this stuff is so amazing. I mean, I've heard a lot of stories of people. A friend of mine back east had done some work with Dr. Hammer, and I think it was Dr. Hammer. It might have been Claude Sabat.
Yeah.
I can't remember now. But anyway, she was telling me all about it a couple of years ago.
Yeah.
And about how amazing it is and how people just, you know, all of a sudden drop whatever illness it is that they've been carrying for a lifetime.
Yeah.
And they're just astounded. And
that's
it's
exactly
so easy.
Right. That's exactly right. And that
it kind of reminds me of that old Twilight Zone episode,
that,
maybe it was Night Gallery, you know, where there was one word you could whisper into somebody's ear and they would shriek and then they were completely changed.
Yeah.
And when I saw that, I said, that's what I'm looking for, that word.
Right. Yeah, exactly. If only I knew that one word. Exactly.
Yeah.
The magic word. But in fact, we all have them. And if we could understand, I guess I'm really suggesting, and what the new medicine of Dr. Hammer's and the Dr. Sabah's work of Total Biology, which is really a collective work, has really shown us that if you work systemically, and there have been many bright therapists who have seen this, but work systemically with family systems, and then you're going to get new kinds of results. You don't just pick the so-called identified patients, which in this case, the baby with leukemia is. How does a baby come into the world with leukemia? Tell me.
Yeah, so that makes
happen?
No sense.
It happens as a function of the family upstream. That's how it happens. So when you begin to look at the intelligence and common sense logic, Valerie, of something like the new medicine and total biology, it makes you wonder why these people have scalpels in their hands. I know that sounds strange,
mainly because they get thousands and thousands and hundreds of thousands of dollars for that.
Exactly. So what we
and,
see
you know,
is that it, we don't
and
really
it's
have
sad,
the
you
science
know, I,
of
as
medicine.
You know, I've been on both
what
sides
we see
of
is
the medical
we have
field.
An art of economics.
Yeah. And I mean, I have never seen such a stubborn group of people as doctors.
Yeah.
You know, it's like whatever they got brainwashed with in medical school, that's what they believe till they die. And it's
that's
a rare
right.
doctor that will actually open up his eyes and start looking around and looking for something that will really, really work better, that will heal his patients. And I'm not saying that they don't all care. And, you know, there's a number of them that don't care.
Oh,
they're in it for the money.
But,
but for the most part, really, they don't know any better.
That's right. That's,
you know, I've had so many patients come to me and say, oh, that doctor, blah, 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 blah. And they're all mad at him. I tell them, listen, give the guy a break. He was brainwashed in medical school. He doesn't know any better. And you shouldn't expect me to act like one of them because I was brainwashed a different way in medical school.
As a natural.
And when you see something like this, with this German new medicine and total biology, it's like, oh, my God. You know, okay, what are all the doctors going to do now?
Exactly. And, you know, that was one of the reasons I really went into psychology, honestly, in the first place was, you know, I was raised during the Vietnam War, and I think we both were, you know, and I looked around the world and I said, my God, we've got to have new legislation so to prevent war as a means of solving conflict. And the more I looked and the more I saw, the more I realized the problem wasn't a political problem as such, so-called having to do with what is written on the page of the legislation. The problem was really in the mind and the heart of man that he saw that blowing each other's brains out could actually help resolve a problem instead of create and spawn new ones. And I said my role in this world would be much more effective if I were to work with that causal level rather than the symptom, which is good or bad legislation. I got to get to the core of the problem, which is the way people think, you know, or don't think, as the case may be. And that is really what guided me. You could almost say it was a kind of a political decision to go into the field of psychology. Not to mention I had an inherent love of understanding and the nature of psychology. I just personally loved it. But, you know, it was really motivated out of wanting to help bring about world peace, you know? And
I saw
that until
we
correct the way people think about things and regard and perceive, we're stuck. And no piece of paper is ever going to create peace. Only the will that is born from a true heartfelt wish for peace is going to be the parent of peace, if you will, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. So, and you've got to be able to heal people's wounds before they can even think about being nice to other people. And, you know, I mean, if you just take a simple thing, when somebody doesn't feel good, they snap at you and you can't get through to them. You can't talk to them. No matter what you say to them, you're going to get an argument because they don't feel good. And it's like they can't be bothered with you, but they can't be honest enough with you to say, listen, I don't feel good. I'm having a bad day. I don't want any sympathy. Just go away. You know? It's not you.
Exactly.
And so people don't do that.
As
and then they get themselves
before,
into more trouble.
You made a simple comment, but it's a profound one, and that is that essentially we are a series of resonance fields. And when you talk about something that has gained such popularity, the notion of the law of attraction, it's that we are resonating with ideas that are coursing through the neurocircuitry of our brain over and over again. And each cell has its own magnetic field in it. And so it will literally, physically attract similar ideas in other people. So think good thoughts, quite literally, and so you will attract others and similar to yourself. It's quite literal. But of course, most people have so many competitive thoughts in their mind. The subconscious is eclipsing their ability to stand on firm, solid, good ground, if you will. So that's why clearing and cleansing and releasing the negative programs that have been embedded in the subconscious is so vitally important. You can't just add good stuff. You have to remove the dark stuff.
Well, yeah, you know? And the same thing works with the physical body. You know, like I keep telling people, you put the most expensive vitamins in the world in your body, but if you don't clean your body out first and remove the obstacle, then none of that stuff's going to work.
Absolutely true. Absolutely. Yeah. Here we go. Again, we have body as metaphor.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's the concretization, if you will, of a mental idea. So as we're saying, you need to mentally and emotionally detoxify just as analogously the body must detox and purify.
Mm-hmm.
For the cells to work well. So
absolutely.
In my approach, in my work with people, Valerie, I work on all these levels, and that's why I feel like I'm truly, I really embrace the word holistic. Let me put it that way. So I deal with the toxins in the atmosphere, in the toxins in water, and I really encourage my clients to drink very pure water and structured water at that, if not really loved water, water that's been prayed over and affirmed.
Mm-hmm.
And to eat, you know, healthy food. But more than even the healthy food really is the attitude with which we eat the food.
Exactly.
And our mind is so powerful that when we create a resonance field with our food prior to actually putting it in our mouths, we are creating a parallel, a resonance, and we are eating it before it even reaches our mouth. And it's mm-hmm. really interesting to invite people to hang out in that kind of, if you will, etheric world in between material objects, like mouth and food, you know?
Mm-hmm.
There's a whole world that exists between the two that can be used wisely for beginning a digestive process that is healthy, where even toxified food, microwaved food, while it's endangered and toxified and, kind of mauled, really, can even then still have more vitality, more life force, because that's ultimately what we need and get and extract from mm-hmm. our food sources. Is life force.
Yeah, exactly. And I keep telling people, you know, everybody asks me, well, you know, I bet you don't even have a microwave in your house. I'm like, hell no, I eat something out of the microwave every day, and they look at me like I'm crazy. And
yeah.
I tell them, all you got to do is bless your food and be grateful for it.
Exactly.
That's all you have to do. That's been proven by Dr. Emoto with his messages
That's right.
from water.
Exactly.
Like it's, and you can feel the difference. You can actually measure the difference and see that there's life still in your food after you've microwaved it, if you pray over it.
Yes.
And the prayer exactly. doesn't have to be anything specific. It can just be, you know, hey,
the prayer has a neutralizing effect is really what you're saying. And
mm-hmm.
to me, that doesn't mean that people should microwave the food. I actually feel very strongly that they should not. They should mm-hmm. have, fill the toxic waste dumps with microwaves. Nonetheless, what you're saying remains very important for people to realize the power of prayer, the power of affirmation,
mm-hmm.
when it involves everything in our lives, not just food. But
Absolutely.
It's interesting, from a total biological point of view, while we believe that and embrace the idea that the best medicine is the medicine that works, and there are people who have such strong belief systems in allopathic medicine and their family doctor, that doctor can fill your body with all sorts of toxic drugs, but if your love of him, respect for him or her, and belief in him or her is so strong, that will reshape the molecular structure of the medication so that it will be good for you instead of toxic. That's
oh,
the
yeah.
power of the mind. That's the power of assigning belief and authority to those outside yourself.
Well, it's interesting, too, that you bring that up, because I have seen plenty of cases of people who had every reason to die and yet lived.
Yeah.
I have seen cases of people that didn't have that big of a deal happen to them, and they died.
Yeah.
And the only thing I can attribute it to is their general attitude which, of course, the German New Medicine talks all about, that moment of shock. And they just can't seem to recover from that without, you know, the proper help at the right time. And, I mean, I can tell you that medical people know when somebody's going to die. They can take one look at them and they know that.
Yes.
So, and you can tell whether it's going to be sooner or later, you know.
Exactly.
And you can tell whether this person's going to be able to dig themselves out of the hole.
Yes.
But what's interesting to me is the times that we all were shocked that somebody actually died. And other times we were shocked that somebody actually lived. I mean, when you've been patching somebody up, and for instance, they've taken, you know, a couple shotgun blasts to the chest and it missed all the vital organs, you know, you just kind of go, wow.
Yes, exactly. Well, you're bringing up something, and I feel a little bad because I didn't do your audience a proper service. I spoke around and referenced the new medicine and more so total biology without really defining what they are. Total biology I did more so, but it really began with the new medicine, which, to get historical about it, is the modern day version of psychosomatic medicine that was largely developed in the 20th century through students of Dr. Sigmund Freud. And, for instance, Franz Alexander, who wrote the book Psychosomatic Medicine, all of which is an outgrowth of the psychoanalytic world and mindset, and very appropriately. So Freud very much understood the relationship between body and soul, to put it bluntly and truly. He really understood it in those terms, and that when there was a physical ailment that was really an expression of an emotional ailment being reflected in the body, the way to deal with it was not by working directly on the body, but by working directly on the emotion and working on the subconscious, the belief system. And then once that got healed, the body would automatically follow suit. Now, this is actually an echoing, a modern-day echoing, of the work of Galen and others, Hippocrates. Right. When you look in the Western Greek world, or their Talmudic medicine, and Egyptian medicine over in the West, and then African medicine, Tibetan medicine, Chinese and Ayurvedic over in the East, you see there is always an inherent, profound relationship between mind, emotion, and body. It was never understood as separate. They don't have words to describe these as separate. It's just not there.
Yeah.
In the Chinese, we have this own notion of the heart-mind. And the heart-mind is the mind that lives in the heart. And in particular, the mind that lives in the heart is described in the word shen, S-H-E-N, which literally in Chinese means spirit. So it is understood always that the spirit is in and of the mind that resides in the heart. And when it is at peace, the body is at peace. When Shen is disturbed, it leads to insomnia, for instance. It leads to mental imbalance. And this is an integral, essentially by definition, integrated form of medicine that the West, in modern day allopathy, does not have any longer, through something called psychoneuroimmunology. It's beginning to reemerge in what they embrace as, you know, mind-body medicine, generically, is beginning to show up again. That it's not really in their science. It's there, but they don't want to acknowledge it because there's very little room, really, for medication in that case, and there's very little room for surgery. There is a place for both, but it's nothing proportionately like it is today. And we would be saving. We think we have a healthcare crisis. Oh, please. We have a crisis in understanding the nature of disease. And if we could clear that up, that would be a savings of trillions, literally, of wasted dollars on nothing. Back pain, knee pain, digestive disorders, cancers, all of this is so relatively easy to remediate through understanding. From the point of view of total biology, Valerie, we say that the common cold and cancer is virtually the same thing. It doesn't really make a difference. The difference is that modern medicine can't cure either of them. And the other difference from a total biological point of view is that there's an emotional conflict underneath both of them. All you have to do is resolve the conflict. And it doesn't matter if it's cancer or common cold. The program of each resolves when the brain doesn't feel that it's the organism is being threatened, and it releases the program, which is, interestingly, the what we call a disease is a program to literally protect the organism from inadvertent death, because the person is so stressed that they're not paying attention to what they're eating, to what they're drinking, to proper sleeping, and they can walk out in front of a bus and hurt themselves. So one of the ways of protecting, it sounds so paradoxical, and it is to the way we think. In total biology, we're making a new medicine, we're making a complete 180-degree turnabout in understanding the nature of it, and by asking pivotal questions about family and about generations, we can get to the root of most physical problems. Not to say that there aren't biological problems that exist. Of course there are. There are bad eating habits lead eventually to a degeneration of cellular activity. I mean, let's be real. You know, breathing bad air, you know, after a while, and drinking toxic water will have its biological effect. But by and large, we really understand. This is how I'll give a quick little sketch, if you'd like, of how the new medicine was born. But I'm just giving an antecedent that traditional indigenous medicines have the understanding of the mind-body relationship all along. It was, in a sense, re-unpacked by Freud and then further unpacked by Hammer and Total Biology's work, largely pioneered by Dr. Sabah. But what happened is an amazing story. Dr. Hammer's this robust, constitutionally strong German physician who had a son named Dirk who was on a ship in the Mediterranean on a cruise who was inadvertently shot by what the story says is an Italian drunk prince on board the ship. And he was rushed to the closest hospital, which was in Marseille, and Hammer was notified. He rushed down to Marseille, and he stayed by his son's side as a doctor and a father for months, trying to bring his son back. Eventually, the son died in his arms. Just one of the most profoundly sad things that could happen. But it did. And Hammer, some months later, was diagnosed with a kind of cancer. And you probably know the story. Do you know what kind of cancer it was?
Wasn't it stomach cancer?
Nope.
Colon cancer or something? I can't remember.
When we have our classes in New York, we like to ask the participants in the workshop to guess, because you start to get the idea of biology, biologic, if you will.
Well, then I'd have to say family-oriented, so that would be like a blood cancer, like leukemia.
Well, what
leukemia,
it really
lymphoma,
is
one of those.
Developed a case of testicular cancer. And the reason it's that, and not even prostate cancer, is because the testicles, of course, are all about procreation and generation of the species. And so with the loss of his son, his contribution to the continuance of the species through his seed was stopped. So his body's attempt to reestablish what had been, which was his making a contribution through planting a seed, of course, in his wife's womb, could recommence. So cancer is understood as a completely natural biological phenomenon of increasing the multiplicity of cells by supercharging or turbocharging the organ in particular that is responsible for a certain kind of behavior. So cancer is best understood from this point of view as a behavior, not a thing. Mm-hmm. It's not a noun, it's a verb. And so his testicles started to produce enormous amounts of sperm so they can carry on what he was experiencing emotionally as a loss of his son. So his testicles tried to fix the problem, okay, by making a new son, providing him with the raw materials to do that. And that is how he discovered that there was an emotional trauma that preceded the onset of diagnosed cancer in cases of testicular cancer, prostate cancer, ovarian cancer for a woman, and lung cancer. And that formed the basis, his observations, first of himself, because he said, I'm too healthy to have cancer. It doesn't make sense. When he unpacked it and reevaluated everything that had happened to him in his life up to that point, he realized that it was the loss of his son, the emotional trauma, that led to his disease. And when he got clear about it, the understanding of it released him. Not acupuncture, with all due respect. It wasn't homeopathy. It wasn't any kind of thing. It was no particular kind of even energy medicine, brilliant as it may be. It was the understanding of the way the system works, the way the mind interacts with the body, that freed him from this disease. And then he started working in hospitals, working literally with thousands of patients, and he kept interviewing them and came up that there was always this trauma of some sort. Now, Dr. Sabah went a little further with this to the point where he realized that it wasn't just a trauma 3 or so months prior to the onset of an illness, but that there were time cycles, biological cycles in the person's life that could, if let's say there was the onset of an illness, cancer or what have you, at age 32, well, he would trace back to age 16 and say, is there anything that happened to you at age 16 that really traumatized your life or adversely emotionally affected it? And then go back to 8, and then 4, and then 2, and then 1. And lo and behold, as he did this kind of interesting biological mathematics, it was shown that there was a corresponding emotional pattern, which of course wouldn't surprise Freud or Jung or any, you know, on-target therapist or psychoanalyst. It makes perfect sense, and that's the way we think. But to modern medicine, this is a trauma in itself, but I've just given a little peek into the window of what forms some of the thinking of the new medicine and total biology. So, you know, that is, wow, there's a lot more to it. Having to do with, you know, types of tissue that relate to different kinds of disorders and different kind of functionality and dysfunctionality. It's a really interesting thing to understand. You could say the resonance field or the quantum field, or, you know, if you appreciate the work of Rupert Sheldrake, the morphogenetic field of a family. And you always realize you're dealing with family systems. So, anyway, that's we might be out of time, I don't know, but that gives at least a little peek into the way of thinking about an illness, or for that matter, health, and understanding always that the body is acting essentially as an analog or a metaphor for an emotional condition or stress or pattern or disorder or trauma that precedes what we refer to as an illness. And if you correct and address the emotional pattern, you will, by definition, be addressing the physical illness. It doesn't mean not to use remedies, use nutrition, use supplementation. God knows, yes. But to get to the causal level is to deal with the soul's request for understanding. So, what do you think, Valerie?
I muted myself accidentally there. It's exactly what psychics have been saying for a long time, which is basically that that whenever you have something, it's just the body trying to get your attention about an issue you need to deal with. It really only becomes part of the body because that's the only way it has to show you. Because, you know, we're too busy. We're too busy running around making money and, you know, going and doing exciting, fun things, hopefully. So it makes perfectly good sense, Mitchell.
Yeah, right, exactly. It does make exactly common biological sense, Valerie, you know.
Mm-hmm.
That's why I
absolutely
appreciate this.
And before we go, why don't you just do a quick update on what's going on with the swine flu vaccine? I mean, I'm laughing every time I hear something about what's really going on. I'm laughing harder and harder. But if you would go ahead and give people a real quick update on what you're seeing happen with it.
Yeah, sure. I honestly, for the past several weeks, after I came back from Sedona, when we were together, I just came back actually from Albuquerque. I was there for I was speaking at a conference on Prophecy 2012 and time cycles, interestingly. And I've been a little out of the swine virus loop, except to say this, that recently on my own radio show, I had Dr. Len Horowitz on, who is a public health advocate, I think PhD.
Oh, yeah, he's
from
amazing.
Harvard. Yeah, he's amazing. He's a lovely, special guy, very outspoken. And he did a great show for us. And Gary Null is another major pioneer in speaking truth to power. And he brought a whole bevy of people up to Albany to the state legislature to read to them that the seasonal flu was a lot more dangerous and claimed a lot more illnesses than the swine flu ever has. And that all the nonsense about the swine flu is just that. It's a bunch of nonsense. And it's probably just a way for the pharmaceutical industry to sell a lot of second-rate product they can't sell in any other way. And if people get clear about this, so actually the regular flu is a lot more dangerous, and the swine flu is essentially a method of wielding control over an unexpecting, unsuspecting populace who are willing to be gullible and believe what is being dished out by the government, by the Center for Disease Control, by the FDA, and by who are all puppets of the pharmaceutical industry. And if you don't think it's true, just go to Google or anywhere you want and do a little impartial research, and you will see who controls what is spoken in the media, and you will find out why things happen the way they happen. And it's not because our best interest is being kept in mind. The swine flu is essentially a vehicle for wielding control. It's a fear tactic promulgated by the powers that be to scare people into compliance. And what I see, Valerie, is very few people are actually willing to pay attention. Very few people are signing up for the vaccine. People are saying, you know, I think I haven't heard such good things about that swine flu vaccine. And has it been proven? No. Have there been longitudinal studies? No. When was it invented? About last month.
But they've had a score of people now they've had over 30 pregnant women who have lost their babies within 48 hours after getting the flu vaccine. They've had several deaths that they don't want to admit were within 48 hours of getting the flu vaccine. So, and this is not the regular flu. This is the swine flu vaccine that they're pushing so much.
Exactly.
And I find this hysterical. I found out also that there was a state Supreme Court judge.
Thinking for themselves.
Pardon?
I said it's a great wake-up call to help stimulate people thinking for themselves.
Oh, absolutely. But I had to laugh. You know, there was that thing out there about the guy in New Jersey that had filed for an injunction against the pharmaceutical companies, and then I've heard that the injunction was not signed by the judge, and I thought, damn, I thought we had an honest judge out there. Too bad.
Yeah.
Then I heard that in New York, the healthcare workers were supposed to be forced to take the H1N1 vaccine, and that a state Supreme Court judge had issued a restraining order against the state.
Yeah.
And so it's like, yes, it's building. Speak up,
exactly. Exactly. You're totally right. And that's the reason, I believe, that underlying that Gary Null went up, marching up to Albany and raised hell and had a major effect on the outcomes there. So it really is that people are not going forward with this regime, people are not falling for it, and they're failing miserably. And we need to take that as an emblem of the kind of symbol of the kind of power we have and who we are in the whole picture. It looks like we're being controlled, but we're only controlled to the extent that we allow ourselves to be controlled.
Mm-hmm.
And we want to be liberated, and that's the way to play. That's the game at hand, to play
exactly.
And be free.
We have to stand up and say, no, I don't
your own
think
power.
So.
What?
We have to stand up and say, no, I don't think so. I'm not going for that.
Exactly.
And you know what I also saw, I just have to mention this really briefly, cracked me up.
Yeah.
Somebody sent me a photo of a billboard, I think it was in Texas, where they're advocating the people just stop paying the people that are causing all these things at the head of the government. It's like, just paying them, you know, and they'll go away. And I just cracked up because it's a big, huge billboard. I was like, wow, the natives are getting restless. Finally.
Exactly. Drug them. Give them vaccines.
they've been trying to get them drugged.
Ship them.
This is just,
you know, the whole thing is unraveling so quickly. And, you know, I was just listening, Valerie, to Native and Hopi and Mayan prophecy out in Albuquerque at this conference. And I got to tell you, it was fascinating. And what we really see going on, along with, yes, earth changes and a possible magnetic shift in the poles, it's not physical, who knows, really. There is my good friend and colleague, Carl Kalaman, the author of several books on the Mayan calendar, the last one being known as called the Purposeful Universe, basically says that the entire Mayan calendar is really a calendar of human transformation. And that's the pivot of what this whole game is about when we talk about 2012, which he redates, by the way, as October 28th, 2011, and so it's really about the awakening of the human soul. And that's what I was writing about, Valerie, when we were together at the writer's retreat.
And that's what I'm writing about, too, in a different way.
Exactly.
And, you know,
exactly.
I was just thinking when I did the women's water ceremony years ago, you know, they call up three women to get a vision for the community.
Yes.
And I was doing that, and I had some visions that really were shocking. But one of the things, they were talking about 2012, and I said, no, it's all over October 2011.
Yeah. Wow.
And whatever is going to happen, happens by then.
Now, where did you get that information?
That was what I got in the vision.
Okay.
Yeah, so this was like, you know, well, traditionally when you do a full moon water ceremony, it's a women's ceremony done at the full moon, and you use a particular bowl. It's a granite bowl that is hand-carved and has only ever been touched by women. And it's in the shape of a womb, and then there's water in it, and, you know, you go out during the full moon, and you scry into this bowl of water.
Yeah.
And what happens is people that are psychic and can feel and see the other entities from the other dimensions coming through, you'll see the whole group is ringed by what they call the grandmothers. So it's all the native
sure.
grandmothers, ancestors of all the people that are there, because we've all been everything. You know, so, I mean, you could be white bread and you'd still have, you know, Indian grandmothers. So.
Yes, right.
So, yeah, so it was fascinating. And I had some really, really powerful visions. And what they told me was October 2011. And I went, okay, that doesn't give us a lot of time. But they showed me several things that could be happening. Now, I know that we turned the tide. I think it was about a year ago. We really turned the tide because it was kind of touch and go, you know, for several years before then. But now people are finally starting to wake up, and more love is coming on the planet, and more people are not listening to what the media is putting forth, because, of course, the mainstream media is in the pockets of the people that own the world. And so they're trying to scare the crap out of everybody so that they scream at them for martial law and you know, to control them and all this kind of stuff. But there's enough people waking up that are going, no, I don't believe it.
That's
you know,
right.
It's like Al Gore. I mean, for crying out loud, they gave this guy the Nobel Peace Prize for a bunch of crap? Oh, my God. I went, you know, there were 35 scientific errors in that movie and about the global warming. Five.
Uh-huh.
Really bad ones that he has never answered.
I see.
And and then you've got all the, and you know, it may have been well-intentioned that, you know, he was part of this group that put it together, but my objection with this is it's another log on the fire of all the lies.
Mm-hmm.
And when you see that kind of stuff, when you find out that mainstream science is lying, big pharma, big food, and big medicine are all lying.
Exactly.
And they've got stuff, you know, I mean, they have things that could completely cure people right now just using the normal quantum physics medicine.
Yes.
Or, you know, conventional medicine. They've had cures for cancer and all kinds of things for, God, you know, 50 years or more. And buy them all up and hide them away because they can't make any money on them. I mean, you know, what's happening now is people are getting really pissed off and going, I'm not listening to this crap anymore, which is great.
That's right.
Yeah,
exactly.
So I mean, I think, you know, it shows us like what we do, where we're actually informing the public of what's really going on, are really vital. And
that's why
there's
shows
more
like yours,
and more
Valerie,
of us.
And of course, you know, what I do, we're so aligned, but we offer alternative media, which allows people to get, I mean, I dare say, the truer scoop of what's happening. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's not like we're making a purchase and saying that, you know, we know that everything we're saying is true. But what we are offering is alternative thinking. We're thinking about the program. We've stepped out of the box, out of the matrix, so we can think purely outside of the mainstream, which gives a person leverage. And if you have leverage, you have altitude. And if you have altitude, you have the eagle's view, not just the mouse's view, you know? And
exactly.
You can get
and you can be free no matter where you are.
That's right.
Attitude.
That's right, exactly. And that freedom allows and breeds health because you're not locked in and locked down. And that's where so many people have lived for so long. And there is a tremendous amount of disillusionment going on, which is, by the way, the breaking of an illusion. It's the best thing that can happen. It's a fundamental aspect of Vedic spirituality. The disillusionment is the most important part of the awakening, enlightening process. You must become disillusioned. If you think about it, you see.
Yeah, disillusioned. Absolutely.
There you go.
Boy, that's
exactly.
For another show. We're going to have to get on and talk about that.
You must become disillusioned.
Yep.
It's a good thing. Otherwise, you're caught in the illusion.
Right,
and
in the Maya.
You
the
cannot
glamours.
See the forest for the trees. And
well, we'll have
time.
To do another show
it's
of that, Mitch, because we're out of time. So if you
would, go
ahead and
up.
Give your contact information if anybody's interested in contacting you further about the stuff that you're doing and maybe taking a couple classes.
Sure, absolutely. And we do, you know, I do sessions over the phone as well with people across the country and beyond, actually. And we have the Harmonic Energetic Balancing Program where we do the computerized prayer wheel with the photograph and really interesting stuff. And we have classes coming up at the end of January, which is a combination of total biology with neurolinguistic programming in New York City. So, come to abetterworld.net, www.abetterworld.net. I'm on every Tuesday night online on the TV show or in Manhattan on Channel 57 and on radio every Thursday at 1 o'clock. In fact, Eastern Standard Time, that is. So this Thursday, Valerie, I'll be having on Alex Tomac, who is I call him a nutritional genius, and he has come up with, I told you about the Protein Extreme, formula, and he was such a popular guest of mine that I just have to have him on again. So he's come up with some more formulas having to do with the brain and the spinal cord, so I want to give him a chance to share that with the audience, so... It's all at abetterworld.net, abetterworld.net. And got a newsletter and love to have you join us.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much. This hour has, like, flown by as usual.
Oh, my God. This has been great, Valerie. You're wonderful. Yeah. I love the work you do. Please know, I think so highly of you. And your mind and is such and humor is just beautifully aligned. And I totally appreciate it.
Well, and I appreciate you, too. We have this mutual admiration society here.
We do. And it's very healthy.
Yeah, we're like two little kids when we get together.
Exactly. Giggling about one thing or another, and another.
Absolutely.
Well, thanks
it's
so
great.
Much for having me on tonight. It's been a pleasure to talk with you and share with your audience.
Thank you so much for enlightening us. And, people, please remember you can go to www.abetterworld.net to find out more about what Mitchell Rabin is doing. We've been talking with Mitchell Rabin about German new medicine, total biology, and kind of a swine flu vaccine update. And also, the show has been brought to you by our wonderful sponsor, Hydramay Skin Nutrition. You can find them at www.hydramay.com. That's HYDRAME.com. And as usual, thanks for listening. And until next week, be happy, be healthy, and be who you really are. Nighty night.
Time to awake from your sleep. Rise to a new day.
too.